This is Crucial Tech, a podcast about technology that affects all of us in a format that allows you to consume it in the time it takes to go to and from the grocery store. I'm your host, Lou Covey, and I probably know more about it than you do. And if I don't, I know someone who does. But first... Hi, this is Lou Covey with Crucial Tech.
And I'm Joe Basquez, sitting with him.
And we're having a conversation here. One of the things that we want to do at Cyber Protection Magazine is make this whole issue of cybersecurity accessible to everyone, because it can be really complex and confusing. But the thing is because it's so complex, people tend to ignore it. And Joe and I were having this conversation about it. It's not something that can be ignored. But the technology of it isn't that complicated for the individual person. It's just a matter of having the desire to do it. Joe, I was reading a couple of reports in preparation for our conversation here. And the Enterprise Strategy Group, which is an organization that studies cybersecurity for enterprises, has reported that 70% of companies use up to 10 third-party tools to manage security, hygiene, and posture. That makes it really complicated for them.
Yeah.
But at the same time, of those same companies, 59% said that attacks generally start with devices on their networks that are unmanaged. That means, here's an example for you. You walk into a Starbucks, you get yourself a cup of coffee, and you sit down, you open up your laptop or your iPad or your phone, you start checking your email. You're in Starbucks doing this specifically because you want to use their Wi-Fi. And when you connect to it, it'll give you this little thing at the bottom of it that says unsecured network. And what that means is your device is now vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Anybody can hack into that network, or somebody can be actually sitting next to you or across the way in Starbucks, and they might be able to hack into your phone. And if you use that phone to go into your business or into an enterprise, that is now an unmanaged device.
Right.
Let's start there.
There's a lot even to unpack there, right?
So let's
just jump in here. One of the things that we were talking about before when we were talking was that, you know, all the various podcasts you do, you speak to experts, right? Mm-hmm. And they all have, you know, different pieces of the puzzle, right? And it occurred to me, you did a podcast a couple of weeks ago with a mergers and acquisition expert, and it really highlighted two points to me. There are two things we say on this podcast all the time. First one being that your security is only as good, it's only as strong as your weakest link. And the second one is that humans are always your weakest link. Right. Yeah. When you did that podcast, it really highlighted to me how little people can see the actual security chain. Okay, let me give you an example. So I don't think that I'm really uncommon from most people who use technology. Right. So here's an example. Let's say that you have an online bank account and you have a password for that account, and let's assume for the moment that you're not one of those people using 1234 or something stupid like that, right?
Yeah, which is a big problem.
Right, which should not be anymore. It's astounding to me that we're still talking about that, right? But let's assume for a moment that you've got a decent password, it's randomly generated, whatever the case may be, right?
Right.
You know that your bank through that password is somewhat protected. That would be link one, right? Now let's say, for example, they have two-factor authentication and you have link two. That essentially is the limit to your view, okay?
Yep.
You don't know really who your bank is partnering with to do certain things. You don't know who they're partnering with for their security. You don't know what kind of standards that third party has in place. through those mergers and acquisitions you talked about, you don't know what that acquisitions company has in place. People really cannot see that far down their chain, right?
Right.
And so I think a lot of people just sort of give up. And they go, you know, and the other thing we say right here is we often ask, whose responsibility is it for security? And we always say it's everyone's, right?
Yep. Yeah.
But I think because people can't see that far down the chain, they sort of give up and they go, well, if it gets hacked, my bank will give me the money back. Or, well, yeah, I've got a password, so that's my bank's responsibility. And ultimately, when I thought about that and really what that means, and some of those numbers you just gave kind of point this out, it's not really that we need another piece of technology. Yes, we'll need that. Yes, there are threats coming around the corner that will need technology. But I think the biggest problem we have right now is complacency, right? People not doing the things they know they should do. For example, those long passwords, those random passwords, two-factor authentication. So my question to you really is, how do we combat complacency? And you could talk a little bit about, you know, from a consumer perspective, as well as from an enterprise perspective, because the truth kind of remains with enterprise as well. You could spend an unlimited amount of dollars in new technology, different layers of systems. You could put everything in place and someone comes on your network and clicks on a link and boom, you know, something bad happens. So where does the CFO even say, you know, we've done the best we can. That's enough of the budget. Right. So those two things, how do we combat complacency?
Boy, you know, that is the $1 million question. And part of it comes, I think part of it comes in the issue of training, not just employees, but everybody. Let me give you an example that's just happened to me. Now, I am sitting in my office as I normally am, and I'm actually required to sit here now because I contracted COVID over the weekend. Okay. I can't go anywhere. And for me, an introvert saying, well, you have to stay home in your room. I go, okay. So here I am. But I need a medication to combat the cough. And it's been prescribed and it's at the pharmacy. It's at Safeway Pharmacy in Redwood City. I'm going to say it because I'm really pissed off at them. Okay. And the thing is, I ordered it through their app. Okay. And pharmacy orders through Safeway are focused, funneled through another third party that does the fulfillment. Okay. They accept the money. They alert the pharmacy and then they arrange for it to be delivered. Yeah. It sounds like a great idea. Well, I made the order at 9 o'clock in the morning, and I got the confirmation from the third party company that everything has been taken care of. I got the notification from my bank that my credit card had been charged. And so at 2 o'clock, I still hadn't received the medicine. So I called up the pharmacy and they said, well, we have it here, but we have no payment and we have no authorization to deliver. I said, but I've got your confirmation here. You don't have it from us, and we don't have a credit card on file. I said, you shouldn't have a credit card on file. I didn't give you my credit card. I went to the third party that does the fulfillment. And he says, I don't know anything about that. So nah. The pharmacist doesn't know what her own infrastructure is. She hadn't been trained on it. And I ended up calling Safeway customer service headquarters. And they said, well, it says here on your account that it's been paid and you've ordered the delivery. I said, yes, that's the problem. Your pharmacist won't deliver it. Won't send it to me. Well, you'll just have to call us back tomorrow. I said, well, wait a minute. Don't you have access to the third party? He says, no, we don't. What third party is that? So the customer service didn't know about the third party fulfillment center. Nobody in Safeway has been trained on how they manage pharmacy materials online.
Wow.
Yeah. And this is a huge company. a huge company, and they don't know what's going on. So to a certain extent, I'm kind of glad that Safeway doesn't have my information because apparently they don't know how to handle it.
Sure.
And I ended up calling the fulfillment company. Yeah, and this is something, the kind of stuff I do. Most people just give up, right? I called the fulfillment company, and inside of 30 seconds, they fixed the problem. My prescription's on the way today. But they knew how to do it, but Safeway doesn't. And the third party company is a small company. You know, they're like 50 people in San Francisco. So training is in absolute is absolutely missing. And that's the problem, is that we're focused on things that we don't need to be focused on. I was talking to Dr. Chase Cunningham, who was the last podcast we did. He is chief security officer for a company called Ericom. It's a cybersecurity company. Well, tell you what, let's go ahead and listen to this part of the interview. It's just a few minutes long.
Just like any other market, there's a lot of things to be kind of shiny object in this space, right? The thing
Right.
that's out there is let's focus on these crazy crypto problems. Let's talk about quantum security, et cetera, et cetera. Those are things that sure we should deal with eventually, but we have issues right now with like people using password 123. I mean, we're dealing with problems that we knew about 20 years ago. And we're investing in solving things that we haven't even figured out the reality of the threat. So my point was really to wrap people's head around blocking and tackling basic fundamentals, good approaches to the problem, a realistic assumption of risk is way better than trying to invest money and resources and tax dollars into things like quantum security. We're so far from that problem that we shouldn't be worrying about it right now. Sure, research it, think about it, fine. But to be actually lining up and putting legislation down, which is what I was covering, to solve those problems, it's only taking away from things that we should be fixing right now.
Do you think that problem is, when we're talking about legislation, is the lack of actual knowledge within the legislators to be able to handle the problems?
1,000%. You know, I do a lot of briefings on Capitol Hill, and the last time I was talking about drone security, this one particular congressman, who I won't put him out there, but I was talking about that there were no technical controls to stop me from flying a drone into a 737. And their response was, "Well, that's illegal." And I said, "Yes, like that, sure, that's illegal." I said, "It was illegal for me to speed on the way here too, but I did it anyway."
So, and what you're saying resonates with me because based on the numbers I've seen, and I'm being conservative here, 9 out of 10 of cyber crimes are committed by criminals who identify someone who's just not doing the basics. I mean, it's sure that there are attacks on the infrastructure. They don't happen very often, but the senior citizen on Social Security, like me, who really doesn't know how to do basic cyber cleanliness, are the ones that are actually 90% of the crimes. So, how do we get to that point where we can teach these people how to do things right?
Well, I mean, the number one thing that people should really know is that this is not exceptionally complex for your average everyday user. If you want a really great thing to do right now for whatever accounts you have, there is often something called multi-factor authentication.
Yes.
It sounds complicated. It's not. It takes 90 seconds to set up in most instances. Go do that now, and you're solving a massive avenue of the problem. And it if everybody that had accounts did MFA, we would take away 70% of the threat vector.
Well, the argument against that I've been reading is that the criminals are figuring out how to get around MFA.
Correct. There are ways to get around it. However, comma, it's one of those deals. If I have 10,000 slow gazelles, do I go after the one that can run really, really fast? No, I just go after the ones that are easy picking. So
Yeah.
don't
So
be easy
the
picking.
ones that don't do it are the ones that are most likely to get hit.
Right. And
And that brings me up one other question. I think we'll kind of finish with this and make this a real short session. We hear almost every day about how cyber attacks are increasing. But what I'm not hearing is about how many of them are successful. I made a comment. I think it was on one of your posts. Oh no, it was on Ian Thornton Trump's page, where he says that the government is, or experts are warning the government that cyber attacks are on the increase. And my comment was, and the sun rises in the east. So we know it's happening, but the awareness of cybersecurity, I think, is higher than it's ever been. There are more effective tools to deal with it than there have ever been. And so are we actually making a dent in stopping the attacks? Even though they're coming fast and furious?
At the grand strategic national level in defending our own infrastructure, we have people that are doing amazing work. We have people that they're in the front of the fight. They're solving the problem. They're literally defending the way that we live our daily lives. So number one, I would say that's true. However, we do have more technology coming online all the time now that is becoming increasingly complex for people to secure and take care of. And we've built a way that we craft technology now that is inherently vulnerable to compromise. So the problem is not going to get better. And unfortunately, in this space, all that you're ever going to hear is about the failures, not the successes.
All right. So that was what Dr. Cunningham was saying. Okay. Is that part of the problem is that we focus on the wrong things. And when it comes to cybersecurity, we don't really have to do a lot of technical things. We just have to be willing to take 90 seconds, as he said.
So you did mention training as an important part of, you know, combating complacency, but that's another question. Is really, do you think that, I guess I don't know that the value of the tools that we currently have and should focus on is really expressed to people. For example, I think, you know, using two-factor authentication, I think people don't like to take that extra step, right? But the reality is, if you took 90 seconds to set that up and another, you know, 30 seconds to, if that, to click into wherever you're trying to go, if you told people that could save you $30,000 in someone stealing your identity, I think they would go, you know what, that 30 seconds is worth it. That 90 seconds is worth it. And I don't think that message really gets across. What do you think about that as a part of combating complacency?
Well, I'm not exactly sure if it doesn't get across. If people aren't making the attempt to get that across. The problem is how we consume media today. It's very superficial. One of the things that really kind of pisses me off is that there's an ongoing story, pops up about every month or so, about how hackers are bypassing multi-factor authentication. Yeah, it's true. They can't. There is no such thing as absolute security online. There's no such thing as absolute security in life. But as Dr. Cunningham said, if people would just do that, 70% of the attacks that are reported would be ended. It's not a matter of making it an absolute secure situation. It's a matter of making it more difficult for hackers to do it, because they're going to look for the low-hanging fruit.
And so that was another important point you made when we were talking, which was, you don't have to be absolutely secure. You just have to be more secure than the person next to you. You have to be more secure than the person who's using 1234 as their password.
Yeah. And you know, the thing is that a lot of people do make good passwords. They do use multi-factor authentication. The people we got to be concerned about are our leaders. I mean, I can't remember what the exact number is, but I was reading an article about the percent. It's a majority of CEOs of Fortune 500 companies use stupid passwords like password or 123456 as their password for their office computers and personal computers. So when the...
That's astounding to me. It's astounding. And people should know, right? Which is exactly the point of this podcast and Cybersecurity Protection Magazine, is to get those people with the budgets and the money to understand these things. These are things we've known for, you know, 20, 30 years. Yeah. I mean, I don't know why these things are still happening.
Well, and that's a point that I want to get across here. I mean, when you ask about how are we going to get past the complacency comes from the belief that somebody else is going to do it for us. And I'm here to tell...
So that's another good point, though, right? Is that you mentioned that, you know, multi-factor authentication would eliminate 70% of the threats. There are a lot of people who also think, well, it's not going to happen to me, right?
Yeah.
Why not take that extra time to do that extra random long password and make sure that it doesn't, or not make sure, but make it more difficult?
Well, I think if we can get this point across, the people who you are expecting to protect you are not protected themselves. Yeah, that's the scariest part, and that's what incentivizes me to turn my security settings up to 11. Yeah, sometimes I get annoyed by it, you know, when, because I use Firefox, Safari, and Brave on my computer, and then I use DuckDuckGo on my iPad. And I use Firefox, a special Firefox secure browser on my phone. And quite often I can't access certain websites because my security settings will not let it happen. But my feeling is, if these companies are not going to secure themselves, and they're not going to get my business, and I don't care.
Sure, what you don't want to go putting your credit card number into some website that's not secure, right?
Yeah.
And that's one of the easiest indicators to tell you whether or not something is secure. Now, oftentimes people will override that and just go, I want that thing and do it. But let me ask you another question and challenge you.
Oh, wait, I want to finish one more thing here about how we're going to get past this complacency. It was just announced, I think last week, maybe a couple of weeks ago, that Google, Apple, and Amazon are already working on eliminating passwords for their services.
That's interesting. What will they replace them with?
Multi-factor authentication, biometrics. They're all different kinds of things. There was a company that I've known for some time, but I went back and talked to them. They're called Cyberus Labs. Cyberus Labs. They're a Polish company. And what they've got is a system where you've got an app on your phone and you go to your bank's website. And hopefully your bank is also a customer. Okay. And there's a little key on the website. And what you do is you open up the app on your phone and you hit that button, and it emits a 10 millisecond subsonic tone, so you can't hear it, that your computer will pick up, and it will identify you from that signal. And it's a one-time passcode that disappears. It never comes back again. And that's what lets you in. So no multi-factor authentication, no passwords, no biometrics, and too fast for anyone to capture it. And whatever it is, it goes away. So these are the technologies that exist. So when you talk about eliminating complacency, the tech industry has for a long time decided, okay, we're going to do this stuff the way we want to do it, and you have to adapt. And they're finally getting to the point, thanks to legislation and bad press, so these people are just not going to take care of themselves. We're going to have to do it for them. So you may not want to do multi-factor authentication. You may want to do a decent password, but you're going to have to. They're going to make you do it. And that's just the way it is.
And I am seeing a lot more of that, right? When you set up accounts on pass on websites, they'll tell you, you know, your password has to be now, you know, 13 characters long, as opposed to it used to be, you know, 6 to 8. So yeah. they are forcing some of that now.
Yeah. And you know, that's a good thing. People are annoyed by it, but yeah, the only way to be absolutely secure on the internet is not to be on the internet, period.
I think things like the subsonic tone are interesting because they don't necessarily add additional time to getting into something. And so I think that's what people are most likely to use.
Yeah, amazingly enough, that company is having a really hard time convincing companies to do that.
I'd be interested to learn more and why they think that is. My other question to you, and this might kind of flow into that. You mentioned that in that report you had, it was the CEOs, right? The head of companies that are using garbage passwords.
Yeah.
Whose responsibility is that to point that out to them?
The chief information security officer or chief security officer. But in that podcast that you mentioned, okay, remember the story that the VC told about when he was a CIO at a startup company and they had acquired another company?
Yes.
But and he was scheduled to go on vacation for a week. And he gave instructions, okay, we're almost set up. Do not turn on the network until I get back because I need to check the security.
Yeah, don't connect them.
And while he was gone, the CEO countermanded his order. And the IT manager called the CIO and said, the CEO has ordered us to turn it on. We've just turned it on. And he said, you need to go into the server room and disconnect the network. Pull the plug. And before he could hang up the phone and go do that, it was 30 seconds and their network had been hacked in that much amount of time. And that's all on the CEO. And that's one of the reasons why the Securities and Exchange Commission is considering a requirement that board of directors include the chief information security officer on the board from now on. If you don't have one, you have to have one. And that's what it's going to take. It's going to take legislation. You're going to have to make these people do stuff.
Yeah. People don't move until they have to, but that's obvious, right? The fact that we're still talking about something as simple as a password, you've mentioned before you use a random password generator. That doesn't take any extra time. And why people wouldn't do that is simply because when they go back the next time, they've got to remember it, or they've got to generate another one, or they've got to do something.
Well, that's the other thing we haven't talked about is password managers. They have password managers on, you can buy a password manager I can't remember the name of them now because I used to have one, but Safari has it, Firefox has it, Brave has it, even Chrome has it. I won't put Chrome on my desktop computer because it is so buggy and it gets hacked so many times. So I refuse to use it on my desktop. And it's also incredibly, it's bloatware. You know, it'll just eat up your memory like crazy. My computer runs so much better now that I've eliminated Chrome from it. But they have password managers. So what happens is that you put that new long string in there and it'll give you a prompt. Do you want to remember this? You go, yeah. So that the next time you go to the website, it automatically sets it up. It puts in the password. You don't have to remember it. But that password is more secure than your 123456 or password. Okay, it's a strong password. But the thing is that even with that strong password, I've got multi-factor authentication set up for absolutely everything. So even when I put my password in, I have to get the text or the email.
If you think about it in terms of the hassle it could save you, whether you're a consumer or an enterprise, it's worth it. Take the extra 90 seconds. That's all. I mean, it's that simple.
Yeah. There's one other area I want to touch on here, and I'm writing an article about this right now. I know this is a controversial topic, but it's the issue of abortion and the draft Supreme Court ruling. Now, I'm not going to make any statement about whether abortion is good or bad. That's not the point. What Justice Alito has written in that leaked draft opinion, if that has not changed, we got more problems coming. Because essentially what he said, they say the Roe versus Wade decision was based primarily on the 14th Amendment and the right of due process, which includes the right to privacy. Okay, that was the whole point of Roe v. Wade, is that the state didn't have a right to invade the privacy of a woman who wanted to make a private medical decision. And Alito's ruling doesn't just knock the right of privacy out for people wanting to get abortion. He stated that the right to privacy does not exist in the Constitution. We need to understand that our assumed right of privacy under a constitutional guarantee is under attack right now. Your government is not going to protect your privacy. The corporations that you interact with are not protecting your privacy. The only person who can possibly protect your right to privacy is yourself.
Well, I think that's another interesting point, because that's something that I have said on our other podcasts as well, is I think that we have gotten to a point, because we can't see very far down the chain. I'll go back around to what I said. I believe a lot of people have gotten to the point where they assume that their information is kind of out there. It's already out there because hacks are constantly going on. You're constantly getting letters in the email, in the mail, saying that, you know, your information has been exposed. There are, you know, there's just endless numbers of ways for you to find out that your information has been exposed, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I think a lot of people just assume that that's the, so I think when we were talking originally, that's the word I used. There's a lot of assumptions that go on, right? When someone uses a password that's 123456, they assume that I've made this so simple that no one's going to figure it out.
Yeah.
Right? Same thing. I'm going to assume that my information is already out there because it's happened so many times.
Yeah.
That, you know, whatever. I'm just going to take this password and put it in because I have to. Right? So there's a lot of assumptions going on there. And I think a lot of people are comfortable with that, and they've gotten comfortable with that. That it's all, that information is out there, right?
A lot of that information is. But the thing is, you can keep that information in control. And the article that I'm working on regarding this particular ruling, if it goes through, I'm going to be giving some very basic things you can do to protect yourself. Not only from a technological standpoint, but from a non-tech standpoint. The criminal element already knows this. And we need to start adopting practices that the criminals are using to protect their own identity, to protect our identities. And that's a sad state of affairs, but that's the way it is in America.
Well, that's a sad statement to end on, but I think... maybe reality.
Yeah. Sorry to be a Debbie Downer, but that's the way it is.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Well, folks, on that note, I suggest that it's 5 o'clock somewhere. So get yourself your cocktail. and let's move on from there. This has been Lou Covey and Joe Basquez with Crucial Tech. If you have questions, concerns, comments, or anything like that, you can write to me at cyberprotection-magazine.com. There's places you can write comments there, or you can send us a note through the website. Or you can go to anchor.fm/crucialtech and leave a 1-minute comment, question, or concern. And we might end up turning your input into a show itself. But we'd like to hear from you. So this has been Crucial Tech and Foot Washer Media Production.